You're listening to Health First, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
And we are back. Chris Ferguson has not phoned in yet on the effects of gaming, so we are going to go again to a recorded message. So welcome, Carrie. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. It's great to have you on the show today. So we were going to pick your brains about the science of addiction. How does this happen and how do we help our loved ones?
Okay. Well, in my career, I've seen so many different cases, and the answer isn't so simple. It's actually quite complex, but I'm going to do my best down in a simple way. What we found, you know, after years and years of doing this work, is that addiction doesn't discriminate, and it affects at least one in four people, especially in the U.S. And what we've noticed in a lot of our patients is that, you know, they can come from healthy family systems, or they can come from, you know, unhealthy family systems, or they can come from, you know, an abusive household or an alcoholic household. And you know, the correlation amongst all of these people is that many of them all have what we call a chronic thought disorder, where their thinking is kind of distorted and their emotions are unmanageable. And we really believe that addiction starts with this inability to manage emotions in a healthy way, and we found that many people turn to drugs and alcohol as a result of that.
So when we hear of mental health and addiction, there's a mental health problem preceding the addiction.
Well, yeah, it may not be, you know, what we would say like a diagnosable mental health issue, like a bipolar disorder or depression or anxiety. It could just be this misfiring of thoughts and a lot of emotions that people have trouble dealing with. And oftentimes, you know, there are people that do have both. You know, the mental health diagnosis precedes the substance use.
Mm-hmm. And then the substance use actually physically changes how the brain works.
Say that again?
I say then the substance abuse actually changes the physical way the brain is actually firing or working.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So
yes.
If I was to check into Beachway, how long would I have to be there to actually make changes in my life that I could stick to?
I mean, we believe in long-term treatment. I would say that 90 days would be what, you know, I would recommend for anybody coming in if it was possible given their life circumstances. You know, 90 days starting out at an intense level of care where you are, you know, in the center all day long. Passes are limited. Contact with family and friends, it's limited as well. And then slowly throughout the 90 days, depending on progress, people, you know, would step down to a lower level of care. But I would say 90 days because you need that time to, you know, for lack of a better word, dry out, mm-hmm. you know, to repair pathways in the brain that have been damaged. You need time away from the substance that you were abusing.
And Carrie, are there different levels of addiction? Like 90 days, 3 months out of your busy addicted life is a big chunk. Is there just mild addictions that take less time to handle?
I think it all depends on, you know, whether or not the person is willing to. We could see somebody come in with, 25 years of alcohol dependence, drinking every day, and that person could come in really, really motivated because, they've had a lot of consequences as a result of their use, and they may only be able to stay for 30 days. And then they, start seeing an outside therapist when they get home, or they start working a 12-step program, and that may work for them. So I think that that's all contingent on how willing the person is to want to get better as well.
Mm-hmm. And do people come willingly, or are they forced into your program?
It's a voluntary program. However, they may have had a ultimatum from their family, or maybe they've had legal issues that, push them into treatment. They may be legally motivated in some way, or they may not want to lose their marriage or their family. So it's voluntary, but they may have something driving their decision to come in.
Mm-hmm. And you said 25% of the United States struggles with addiction?
That is the new statistic that's out there.
Is that higher than most countries?
Yes.
And why?
Oh, wow. I think that the pharmaceutical industry, plays a big role in that. I think that what we've seen, and this is not to disrespect the medical profession or physicians, but what we've seen is that several of our patients coming in are over medicated these days, and there's a pill for everything. And what I've noticed is that a lot of physicians, don't really have a lot of training on addiction and how to treat somebody who's had a history of addiction. And so these physicians can be manipulated, by someone who is addicted. And medications are definitely overprescribed, and I think that therapy is not being, utilized like it should be. I think that medications play a part in someone getting better, but I think that therapy, enhances that and is a bigger factor in someone's recovery.
Okay, Carrie, do you see a lot of opioid addiction in the States now, or?
Yes.
So that's, rather than thinking about the mental health drugs, as the painkillers are the more addictive?
Yeah, well, and I think that there's been, and I know that actually that they've really cracked down on a lot of these pain management clinics that used to be prevalent in the U.S., and there's stricter regulations regarding, prescribing those medications. But now we're dealing with fentanyl, and that's coming in from overseas. And there have been, I don't know the statistic, but, the president is saying that, it's calling it an opioid crisis in the U.S.,
Right. And so what does it take after entering into the Beachway Clinic to, what's the walk like for the first 2 or 3 weeks when you're coming in off of that?
The walk like, you said?
Yeah. Like what do you have to go through? What's the it must seem like eternity, the first 3 weeks coming off of it.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. It's hard. For the first, I would say about for first 2 weeks or so, and it could go up to 3 weeks. It's like phase one of treatment, which is detox and residential, which is the highest level of care. And in that phase of treatment, you're detoxed off of the medication. You're seeing a therapist. You're in smaller groups. You're resting. You're learning how to eat properly. You're learning how to take care of yourself. And for the patient, if they're coming off of, you know, a physically addictive drug like a benzodiazepine, alcohol, or opiates, it's pretty painful. So they're experiencing withdrawal symptoms, even though they're being medicated, you know, throughout their detox. But once the detox portion ends and those medications are no longer utilized, the person doesn't feel very well. So it's our job to engage them in treatment and to let them know that, you know, these are normal feelings and they're going to pass, and not to leave, and don't run. You know, you at that point in time, it's crucial, because that's when somebody wants to leave. Uh-huh. And they don't feel well, and they want to drink, or they want to do whatever it was that they were doing in order to feel normal to them. So we have to talk to them about what normal is. Uh-huh. and utilizing what you were utilizing, that's not real life. That's not how the body is supposed to feel.
So you really have to engage with them and get their trust until you can get them walking far enough that they can actually trust themselves.
Right, and that takes a long time as well. You know, just to get them, you know, for them to trust themselves, you know, and, you know, the first phase is very crucial, because we want to get them to that second phase of treatment, which is essentially like a lower level of care in a way. Mm-hmm. However... that's where they engage clinically intensely, because they physically are better and they're able to actually engage in intense treatment and really start to take a look at, you know, what was driving their use in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So it's voluntary to step into your treatment. Can a person leave on their own before ending treatment, or once you're in and you've accepted that you're going to do it, do you kind of hold on to them?
Well, if somebody wants to leave and terminate treatment prior to, you know, the recommended time, you know, we're going to intervene, because that's a red flag. Uh-huh. And that's when we need to really make sure, or even prior to that, we need to make sure that we're engaging not only with the patient, but we're also engaging with the family, and that we're letting them know what to expect, and really getting them on our side and teaching them about addiction, so that when and if somebody does want to leave, you know, they're able to unite with us, and we're able to keep that person in treatment. Because, you know, a lot of times when the person starts to feel better physically, they think that they're fixed. So you're also dealing with a lot of denial. Uh-huh. On the patient's part.
And Carrie, is it ever too late? Like, do you see people in their 60s and their 70s still trying to recover?
No. I don't think it's too late. We have a lot of older clients that have come through here. You know, we currently have, and, you know, have had people in their 60s and their 70s, and it's definitely not too late, because, I mean, physically, if, you know, they're alive and, you know, and they're able to function and live in society and, you know, be a part of their family's life, then there's no reason why they can't stop drinking or abusing medication if that's what they're doing.
Right. So you see miracles on a monthly basis.
We do. We see, you know, and a miracle to me is like a shift in perception. You know, when somebody comes in and they're resistant and they're fighting, and, you know, they say they want to be here, but then once they get here, you know, they start to question their decision, you know, because the addicted mind takes over. You know, so once somebody stays and completes and does the work, and the work that we provide here and is committed to continue to do work outside of here, and you get to see that shift in perception, that's the miracle. That's the awakening.
What a great job you have. We're going to have to go to a quick break. And then when we come back, let's talk about how we support the addict as a family.